Well, a hot topic right now is the Middle Eastern revolts and revolutions going on, the Egyptian crisis. Of course, the crisis in Egypt ignited revolutions across the entire Mideast region, and it's certainly ongoing in a state of flux, and nothing is done yet. As we look around at the global financial meltdown, which is still not done. In fact, it's still in the process of deteriorating in a lot of areas, including the United States. We look at food shortages that are coming up, and you look at the price of grain and the shortages there will be as a result of floods, and you look around at the, of course, the moral decay that's happening in the world today that just continues to get more and more disgusting. We look at worldwide conflicts. We look at weather extremes, the floods happening in Australia, the predicted floods up here again in the Midwest. Fargo is supposed to flood again this year for the third year in a row and wipe out crops along with it. Church issues and problems. We know that Satan is alive and well and working to end this world, and he wants it his way. Well, we've observed prophecies for years, and we have looked into the Word of God to see what he says is going to happen at the end, and many of the things that we've talked about in kind of a general way just a moment ago are happening. But I want to look today at some things that God is allowing or causing to happen right now that indeed will have an effect on the entire world. Something that was shuffled into the background, it's interesting, last Thursday evening, a week ago, just a few days over a week ago, I got a call from one of the members, and he said, "Did you see what is happening with the New York Stock Exchange?" I said, "No, I haven't heard." And he says, "About Germany taking control of the New York Stock Exchange, possibly." I said, "No, I hadn't heard that." And so I went on the internet. You can find out. How many of you have heard about that? The German? Okay. Now, you had a week to hear about it. Last Sabbath, when I was speaking about this, it had just happened, and I was looking for it on the news in the process and couldn't even find it. The Wall Street Journal, February 10th, this gives you a synopsis here. It says, Euronext says it is nearing an agreement to be bought out by Deutsche Börse. Any of you who are German, how do you really pronounce that? Good, you don't know either. I will shorten it up by DB. That's the German stock exchange. If the $25 billion deal is reached and approved by regulators in the United States and Europe, the combined company would trade more stocks and futures than any other exchange in the world. And this article, again from Wall Street Journal, it says, Wall Street Journal writes, the merger is symbolic of New York's fading dominance on the world financial stage. I was asking my son-in-law if he'd heard about this yesterday, and I was talking with him, and he says, "Yeah, I heard about it." This guy's like, "So, what do you think?" He says, "Well, it's interesting." I'm going to read from Peter Morici, who wrote for Fox, and this was February 11th, which was just a week ago. And he writes this article, which is very interesting, just from an observer seeing what is happening in this circumstance going on right now in the world. He said the merger between New York Stock Exchange and the DB is 60-40 in favor of DB, which means that it will be the dominant party, even if seats on the board of directors are evenly split between NYSE and DB. Over time, this could have profound negative consequences. I mean, he's viewing this and says, well, this isn't, he didn't say, this is interesting. He says, this goes through. He said, this could have profound negative consequences. And I think he is unaware of just how profound the negative consequences could be, or the offshoot of this, or other things that would happen similarly. Morisi goes on to say, first is the obvious prestige impact. NYSE is the symbol of American capitalism, and essentially it will be foreign-owned. The very symbol of American capitalism owned by Germany. I mean, does that not like put up the ears a little bit make you think about some prophecies? It says, this will further confirm in the minds of world political and financial leaders that gapping U.S. budget and trade deficits and all the foreign borrowing and high unemployment rate that results are significant attributes of an economic superpower in decline. That's a very powerful statement from a casual observer. Well, not necessarily casual observer, but an observer just looking at it from a financial viewpoint. Leviticus chapter 26, if you turn over there, Leviticus chapter 26 talks about a lot of the blessings that a nation will receive if you obey God. And contrary, it goes to say all of the curses that will come as a result of a nation disobeying God. And I think it's interesting, as you look at Leviticus 26:17, he said, I will set my face against you, and you shall be defeated by your enemies. And this is speaking to Israel, and by extension then, prophetically, it's speaking to the nations of Israel who would come from Israel. Predominantly, and we're not going to go into all the prophecies, but Ephraim and Manasseh, which end up being the United States, Britain, Australia, and other Israelitish nations. And so here's a prophecy about what is going to happen to our nation, which is by extension Israel. And it says, those who hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when no one pursues you. And after this, if you do not obey me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins. In verse 19, it says, and I will break the pride of your power. Now, that can be done in a lot of ways. You go on to read about that, and it says, I'll make your heavens and earth hard. You know, heaven's hot and the earth hard. And in other words, your crops aren't going to produce like they should. Your monetary system, by extension, that can be that I'm going to break the pride of your power. It can be the military might and power, which the United States is unquestionably still the greatest military might and power in this in the world. But he says that power is going to be broken. Our financial power is going to be broken. We're the breadbasket of the world. It'll be broken. I want to continue reading Peter Morisi and his observations about this merger between New York Stock Exchange and Deutsche Börse. He says, over time, the distinction between NYSE and other exchanges will blur. As trading floors become ever less relevant and direct trading through combined electronic exchanges dominates, whoever owns the underlying infrastructure, the computers and systems, will be the location of equities trading. You think about that. We've got our country who is... the stock exchange is in New York, and that's where everything is done. And he says, then you move to where the trading is actually done. And he says, that is the location. And he says, in relative terms, more and more U.S. equities will be traded in Europe and other locations, and fewer equities will be traded in the United States. It's kind of like being taken captive without ever leaving home. It's kind of like a house arrest, if you will. You know, the prophecies talk about Israel being taken captive. And I don't know that it necessarily has to be, and I'm not your great prophet, as you know. You've been on know me for several years. But, the Bible talks about the nations being taken captive. Is it possible they can be taken captive without ever leaving home? if our financial system is taken captive and is ruled from some other location, it would be like, as I said, kind of under house arrest, if you will. Now, I just read Leviticus 26, and it says, if you disobey me, then there will be curses. Well, that's it. I mean, you can only break laws of God and principles for so long without it coming down on you hard. Morisi continues to say this, Americans have no one to blame but themselves. In other words, you've sinned, you're reaping the consequences of sin. And he clarifies a little. He says, living beyond their means, they have borrowed and continue to borrow excessively from foreigners to finance a government that spends too much and badly, and personal consumption that leaves too little margin for saving out of income. And he describes it this way, and I think it's very interesting. He says, now all those dollars that went abroad as debt securities are coming back to buy real assets. It's like selling the dining room furniture, chair by chair, to eat caviar every night. Well, I don't want to be able to afford caviar. So the only way I can do that is to sell a dining room chair, and then we can eat caviar still, instead of reducing your outgo. It says it works for a while, but then you have to sell the house, brick by brick. You end up a tenant in your own home or dispossessed. A tenant in your own home, and that's basically what he's saying is happening here with foreign countries buying us, and then we're a tenant in our own home. We don't own it anymore. Another headline when I was doing some research on this came from NPR. This was a very interesting headline in light of this circumstance and Bible prophecies. It is NYSE finds romance in Germany. Will it work? NYSE, New York Stock Exchange, finds romance in Germany. Turn to Ezekiel chapter 23. We can look at many prophecies that speak of this concept and this principle that God said would happen to our nations if we don't obey him. And again, the prophecies are so often dual. Some of the prophecies would refer to things that have happened in the past. It was a prophecy kind of on a short term. And then there are prophecies for a longer term also that would have to do with the end times. And sometimes it's hard to say exactly, well, is this only for that time, or is this for that time and the end time, or is it only for the end time? But so many prophecies are dual. And I'm positive, is talking about prophecies near the end. Ezekiel 23 is speaking here of Assyria. And as we understand Assyria prophetically, as that Assyria took over Israel and then the Germans came down basically and took over Assyria. So we have said when you talk of Assyria, you're speaking of the Germans. And I think that's probably accurate because we talk about the beast and the false prophet. We've always spoken of the beast as being a military head over 10 nations, and that head would be Germany. So anyway, let's read a little bit about Assyria, which, again, if we look into end-time prophecies as dealing with Germany. It said, Ahola played the harlot, even though she was mine. She lusted for her lovers, the neighboring Assyrians. Ezekiel 23:6, who were clothed in purple, captains and rulers, all of them desirable young men, horsemen riding on horses. Here's the good-looking, the wealthy. So we go after the wealth. Verse 7, thus she committed harlotry with them, all of them choice men of Assyria, all of whom, and with and withal for whom she lusted with all her idols, she defiled herself. Verse 8, she has never given up her harlotry brought from Egypt. Now you look into prophecies again, you talk about the harlotry with Egypt, and what did Israel do when they left Egypt? Well, they brought the worship of the golden calf, they brought the worship of the sun, and when God was dealing with all of the gods of Egypt and the plagues, when he brought them out, Israel brought them and through time would go back to worshiping those false gods. Where does our modern day religion come from? Well, if you go back, and it's very easy to research, they come from the paganism that originated in Babylon, that originated in Egypt, and those forms of worship have been carried down today. I'll get to a little bit of that in a moment. But it says, for in her youth, continuing in verse 8, they had lain with her, pressed her virgin bosom, and poured out their immorality upon her. Verse 9, therefore I have delivered into the hands of her lovers, into the hands of the Assyrians for whom she lusted. And again, going back to that headline, that's why I thought it was so interesting. New York Stock Exchange finds romance in Germany. And so we're going after their money. They can buy us out. And won't that be a good relationship? Hosea chapter 8. Hosea chapter 8. And this is a whole book that is demonstrating Israel going after other nations instead of God, romancing those other nations instead of God. Hosea chapter 8, verse 6, the New Living Translation says, this calf you worship, Israel, was crafted by your own hands. It is not God. Therefore, it must be smashed to bits. The thing that we create, the idols that we create, you know, and we've got our golden calves and we've got our monetary system. And of course, now the big thing, if you just buy gold, then you're going to be really wealthy and you'll beat all of the systems and everything. And literally, we go after gold and things. But it says, verse 7, it says, they have planted the wind and will harvest the whirlwind. Stalks of grain wither and produce nothing to eat. Now, we can talk about literally our harvests, which are many, because we're a breadbasket for the world. But that was a lot of their monetary system. And so we could be talking in principle about money. And so you can say that the money that you have planted, you planted the wind, you'll harvest the whirlwind, it'll wither and produce nothing to eat. And even if there is any grain, the foreigners will eat it. And you can use that as far as literally the grain that we produce. And you can look at it as far as the money in our monetary system. The foreigners will eat it. Again, going back to that article we just read. Verse 8, it said, the people of Israel have been swallowed up and they lie among the nations like an old discarded pot. Verse 9, like a wild donkey looking for a mate, they've gone up to Assyria. The people of Israel have sold themselves to many lovers. We're selling our New York Stock Exchange, probably. And again, if this isn't a direct fulfillment of prophecy, at least it shows you what can happen. I mean, how many of you in your musings of prophecy and your looking ahead to what might happen according to biblical prophecies ever considered that New York Stock Exchange would be dominated by German Stock Exchange? Anybody? I never even thought of something like that happening. I mean, it shows you, and again, we can look at prophecies and try to second guess exactly how they're going to happen, and people get themselves in trouble that way. But the point here, more than even a specific thing, is that when God wants something to come to pass, it will come to pass, and that it can come to pass like that. So we always have to be ready, personally, spiritually, and it's not going to be depending on how we second guess prophecy, but I just... interesting, exciting, and frightening to see this type of thing coming about. Verse 10. But though they have sold themselves to many allies, I will now gather them together for judgment. They will writhe under the burden of the great king. Well, there will be a great king, and they will be writhing under them, be in trouble under them. Verse 11, Israel has built many altars to take away sin. We've got churches on every corner practically in this country. What is the origin of the religion of most of the churches you find in the country? Well, you look back and it's got the origins in Egypt. It's got the origins in Babylon, carried over from Assyria. It says, but these very altars have become places for sinning. Verse 12, even though I gave them all my laws, they act as if those laws do not apply to them. Oh, we love God. And we prove that by setting up our Christmas tree and exchanging gifts. And we prove that by having on Easter, we love Jesus so much that we'll have these eggs that we roll around on the lawn, and we'll do all of these things that came from Egypt, that came from Babylon, that came from these practices. And we say, God, you must be pleased with this. And then he says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And he says, well, I don't really mean that. You know, I just, this just nails it. That verse 12 again, even though I gave them all my laws, they act as if those laws don't apply to them. Verse 13, the people of Israel love their rituals of sacrifice. Laps around the rosary and, you know, crosses and all these different things. But to me, their sacrifices are all meaningless. I will hold my people accountable for all their sins, and I will punish them. They will return to Egypt. Back to captivity. Verse 14, Israel has forgotten its maker and built great places. Or palaces. The Hebrew word there means large public building, a palace or a temple. And we've got all of our large buildings. I mean, you look at the buildings in New York and the buildings in Los Angeles and the buildings in Chicago. We've got these huge buildings and many of them huge churches. And so, yes, we've got the palaces. And it says, in Judah fortified its cities. He said, therefore, I will send fire down on their cities and will burn up their fortresses or their castles, their palaces. I mean, if you look at, you know, and we use that term, that your home is your castle. This is my little palace, no matter how big or how small. It's, you know, people, it's my castle. And people have built that. And you look at the housing industry and what has happened and the foreclosures that are going on. And, you know, people walking away from their homes, and everybody was going to make so much money on these homes they got into and now can't afford, and they're upside down on. What is it? Arizona, 63% of people owe more on their homes than they could sell it for. 73% in Nevada. This is exactly, I'll send fire down in their cities and burn up their fortresses. Doesn't even have to be a fire. When you're out of your house, you're out of your house. A financial fire that burned up all your money. Revelation chapter 13. Revelation 13. Says, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed by the sword. And here is the patience and faith of the saints. So a lot of things are going to go on in the world, and then you got the saints, the ones that are working to obey God and really do listen to what he says and want to put him first and take seriously the word of God. In verse 11, I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. In verse 12, and he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and all those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And we've got things historically here that were prophetic at one point. We got things still to happen. Verse 15, and he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive the mark on their right hand and on their foreheads. Verse 17, that no one might buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And that number is 666. Now, I imagine there will probably be at least a dozen ways to put this merger between New York Stock Exchange and the DB, and give it 666. I'm sure people will come up with that, but I don't know if that is even specifically relevant to this. But the point is that there will be a system in the end that has 10 nations, that has a political power over them, and then there is a religious power over them. The harlot that rides the beast and all that type of thing. And exactly who and the where's and the when's and all that type of thing, it'll happen, but I'm not here to tell you exactly when. The point is, it says that no one may buy or sell except someone who has the name of the mark of the beast. And so it's about buying and selling that brings the end about. And indeed, there are wars and there's destruction and killing and all that type of thing. But buying and selling is one of the main components of this whole thing. So we talk about something as major as Germany controlling United States Stock Exchange. You do see how things can happen like that. Whether this is it or not, we'll see. I think it's quite interesting. Before I gave this last Sabbath, I went on the internet and looked at it again. And just before I left for church, I read from Wall Street Journal, February 12th. It's exactly a week ago. And the title was, Germany's Central Bank Chief Resigns. We had a visitor last Sabbath from Germany in northwest Phoenix. And I said, I'll bet you didn't even know that, right? It just happened. And here's why I think it. Just another thing that's interesting, maybe somewhat significant or maybe not, but it says, Weber's withdrawal throws succession for top job at Eurobank into disarray, complicating plans to solve the debt crisis. Well, Germany's planning on solving the debt crisis in Europe. I mean, that's what this is about. And basically, this article will say that Merkel wanted this German finance minister to be over this whole European finance system, but now this guy's resigned. It says, Germany is the driving power behind the European talks over the creation of a permanent bailout system for struggling Eurozone countries, which Berlin has made conditional on other countries adopting through fiscal rules and overhauling their economies. Or Germany, the controlling feature over these other nations. If that's not prophetic, I don't know what might be. It says Ms. Merkel was hoping that having a German ECB president would make the permanent safety net for other countries more palatable for German voters. Other European countries, however, are growing resentful at Germany's growing political dominance in the 17-nation Eurozone. Now, biblical prophecy said there's going to be 10, and so there's disruption. And it says even then, when there's 10 nations, it's made out of iron and clay, which doesn't hold together very well. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So you've got the European countries that aren't real happy with Germany, but you got Germany, who's the only one that could bail things out, and they're the controlling people. And now you got the controlling person possibly over the economic thing going away. So who might be another good option for being over the economic system here? It's interesting to read what's happening. Again, maybe not significant, but it says other Europe. Oh, let's see, I just read that. It says on Thursday, Italy's economy minister, Julio Tremonti, said Dario Draghi, Italy's chief central banker, who was widely seen as Mr. Weber's main rival for the ECB post, would be an optimal next president. Now, we have, I've understood prophecies for years. If our understanding of it is correct, that you've got the 10 nations, you've got Germany over the 10 nations, and you've got the Catholic Church over, you know, riding the beast. Italian. So I mean, here's an Italian guy that's kind of controlling the financial thing who is over Germany and all that. And I don't know. It's a religious beast that is, or a harlot that is riding the beast. But interesting how things can happen. Revelation chapter 17. Revelation 17. And however this is all going to take place, and you can look at things and say, well, that could never happen here, or I don't know how anybody would allow this to happen. But notice God's statement about these prophecies. Revelation 17:17 says, for God has put it into their hearts to accomplish his purpose by agreeing to give the beast their power to rule until God's words are fulfilled. So if there's some things that don't make sense on why would, for example, the United States sell out a stock exchange to Germany, well, if God puts it in the hearts of people to do it, then it's going to happen. And again, if this isn't that significant, and if this isn't some of the fulfillment of these prophecies, God will do it in the way he chooses to do it. So it's going to happen. And that's that. My prophecies are this. The Bible says this. It's going to happen. Exactly how it's going to happen, you guess. And your guess is probably as good as mine. But it's happening. Revelation 18 and verse 3. It says, all the nations have drunk the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. And all the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. And so it's talking about the financial system in the world. And the people that have wealth are the ones who come under this system that is prophesied to come about. And so it's all about the money. It's all about trading. It's all about merchants. And of course, there's a religious aspect, a military aspect. But, I mean, look through in so many of these scriptures and it's tied back to the money. In verse 9, the kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning. And verse 11, it says, the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. And so it's going to be a controlling of the financial system. And it's going to be controlling the trade. Verse 17, for in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing. Every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, and sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, and saying, what is like this great city? And it's about trade. Now, back then, of course, they had camel caravans that traded, and they have ships that traded, and now we trade via stock market and electronically, and you never see your money or very eventually see goods or whatever. But anyway, I think we can see those things are in the process of being set up, and it could happen very quickly. So continue living, but don't start counting chickens in your plans until you wait and see what God's got in mind. Another hot topic, of course, is Egypt and what's going to happen there. Now, I will tell you this, and I've looked at a lot of articles, I've watched a lot of TV programs and that type of thing, where they're talking about the Egyptian situation. And if you've got somebody that tells you exactly what's going to happen in Egypt, I just start running the other direction because nobody knows. I mean, it's set up right now where anything could happen. But I will tell you, you know, although we'd like to have a prophet to be able to tell us, as the disciples were asking, tell us what is the end of things and what will be the sign of the coming of the end of the age. Well, I don't know exactly, but I will tell you definitely how the Egypt situation is going to turn out. So I'll conclude with that. But let's talk a little bit about this situation in Egypt. A lot of people, when the revolution began, were looking at Isaiah chapter 19. You may have been one of those who looked at Isaiah 19 and says, wow. I've heard a number of people comment and say, that's exactly what's going on here. And I know Revelation, or Isaiah rather, chapter 19 had some now historic fulfillment. You cannot read Isaiah chapter 19 and say that it's all been fulfilled because of the terminology there. So I think there's a duality in a lot of that, of prophecies that were fulfilled, but a duality of fulfillment as time goes on. And I think we're seeing some of this in the end. Isaiah 19, and, well, I'm going longer than I said I would, and I can't. I got an early flight. Okay, Isaiah 19:2. He said, I will set Egyptians against Egyptians. Everyone will fight against his brother and everyone against his neighbor. City against city, kingdom against kingdom. So you got Egypt, you know, in clashes. You've got the Mideast where they're clashing. Yemen, who's got northern and southern Yemen clashing and will probably end up with a break. Verse 19, verse 10. They will be in despair. All the workers will be heartsick. What fools are the officials of Zoan? Their best counsel to the king of Egypt is stupid and wrong. This is New Living Translation. But, you know, you've been watching these reports about, I mean, even our president giving advice and saying, oh, well, you should do this. And they say, well, why did he say that? Will they still boast to the Pharaoh of their wisdom? Will they dare brag about all their wise ancestors? Where are your wise counselors, Pharaoh? Let them tell you what God plans, what the Lord of Heaven's armies is going to do to Egypt. The officials of Zoan are fools. The officials of Memphis are deluded. The leaders of the people have led Egypt astray. The Lord has sent a spirit of foolishness on them, so all their suggestions are wrong. What do we do now? I mean, even now, after the president is gone, you see people saying, I don't know. Now what? It's kind of like, you know, grabbing a rattlesnake, and you got him by the throat, but now what? I got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. But what's going to happen? They cause Egypt to stagger like a drunk in his vomit, and there's nothing Egypt can do. They're all helpless, and the head and the tail, the noble and the palm branch and the lowly reed. You know, whether you're the rich who took from the poor in Egypt or whether you're the poorest pauper on the streets, nothing seems to be going right. And it's not going to really turn out all right. McClatchy newspapers had an article entitled Egypt's Revolution Will Remake the Mideast, But How? He said the stakes for the U.S. in a region that has long... The stakes for the U.S. in a region that has long bedeviled it are stratospheric. This is how he describes what effect it's going to have on the United States. He says stratospheric. And notice how and these guys are experts. This one is Ken Pollack, former CIA and White House official, now director of the Brookings Institute Sabin Center for Middle East Policy. He says, this expert on the Middle East situation, He says the Egyptian revolution could be a huge defeat or a huge victory for Al-Qaeda. Okay, so you want to know my opinion? It could be a great victory or a huge defeat. It depends on what happens. He said if things turn out well, it could destroy their narrative. On the other hand, things don't. CIA Director Leon Panetta said of this situation in Egypt, he said the events in Egypt will have a tremendous impact. If it's done right, it will help us a great deal in trying to promote stability in that part of the world. If it happens wrong, it could create some serious problems for us and the rest of the world. Nobody knows what's going to happen. I saw an interview with a couple of, one was 29 and one was 30, and they seemed to be kind of the instigators of the revolution there. And they were talking about it. Good, we got rid of our president, and he's gone now. And the interviewer said, well, now what? He said, I don't know. We haven't thought that far yet, but we got rid of Mubarak. Okay. What will happen in Egypt? Again, I can definitely tell you. I'm going to skip over a lot of things that I would have spoken about, but here's an article in LA Times, and this was on a week ago. It's entitled, Israelis are divided on how to respond to Egypt turmoil. Israel faces what many fear could turn into its most serious national security threat in decades. Fault lines are widening over how it should respond, and some critics say the government appears ill-prepared. Now, they were prepared. One of our members in northern Arizona, his son is an ambassador. He works for the State Department in Israel. What's that?
The embassy.
Yeah, he works for the embassy. And anyway, they were saying that they told him, be ready to leave at any moment during this whole thing. And they're preparing their people to bail out of Israel should this thing go south quicker than they expect it might. Anyway, this guy says, Israel had relied heavily on Mubarak to defend its regional policies regarding peace talks with Palestinians and the security cordon around the Gaza Strip, and now have difficulties adjusting to a more dramatic Egyptian government, democratic Egyptian government. George Friedman, chief executive for Stratfor Global Political Research Firm, said, Israel focused on the Mubarak government as if it were eternal. Okay, now, some truth to that, but they said, good, Egypt is a good ally. You know, since the 73 war, when they kicked their rear ends, you know, and then they decided, well, we don't want to go against Israel anymore, there was a pretty good peace agreement between them, and they didn't have to worry about that part of the world quite so much as instead of others. It says Israelis have obsessed over lesser threats like Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in the Gaza Strip, and the national threat of Iranian nuclear weapons, but they took for granted the relationship with Egypt, which is a much greater threat to Israel's survival. Now turn to Ezekiel 29. Ezekiel 29, and again, whether these things are specific, this is what this is referring to, but definitely the principles are here. Ezekiel 29, verse 6, the New Living Translation. Ezekiel 29, verse 6, all the people of Egypt will know I am the Lord, for to Israel you were just a staff made of reeds. Verse 7, when Israel leaned on you, you splintered and broke and stabbed her in the armpit. When she put her weight on you, you gave way and her back was thrown out of joint. You know, if you've got a bad leg and you're trying to rely on this crutch and the crutch is made of this spindly reed, it collapses and pokes you and then you're done. Israel has relied on Egypt, and Egypt is unreliable. I think it's rather incredible. Chapter 29, verse 13. This is what the Sovereign Lord also says. At the end of 40 years, I'll bring the Egyptians home again from the nations to which they've been scattered. And again, this has some historic prophetic significance and some future prophetic. By the way, it reads here. But it says, verse 14, I will restore the prosperity of Egypt and bring its people back to the land of Pathros in southern Egypt from which they came, but Egypt will remain an unimportant minor kingdom, and it'll be the lowliest of all nations, never again to rise above its neighbors. In verse 16, then Israel will no longer be tempted to trust in Egypt for help. Egypt's shattered condition will remind Israel of how sinful she was to trust Egypt in her earlier days, and Israel will know I am the sovereign Lord. Now, Egypt had some power after they had been defeated, but there were times where their power was mostly under some other rule, like the Greeks. They were an independent power under the Ptolemies for a while. They became a Roman possession for a while, and then in the Islamic Empire, they had some dominance, but again, under Islam. And today, even, they're mostly an Arab and not a true Egyptian nation. The most true Egyptians end up being the Copts, COPTS, and Gypsies. We could go into some of the prophecies of Daniel chapter 11, where it says the land of Egypt shall not escape when you got the king of the north and the king of the south coming against one another. So you've got the king of the south, probably an end-time Muslim leader, bringing the Arab nations up. And then you've got the king of the north, which is a beast power in this huge battle. Ezekiel chapter 30. Ezekiel chapter 30 and verse 2. Says, Son of man, prophesy and give this message from the sovereign Lord. Weep and wail for that day. The terrible day is almost here, the day of the Lord. It's a day of clouds and gloom, a day of despair for the nations. Verse 4, and a sword will come against Egypt. Those who are slaughtered will cover the ground, and its wealth will be carried away and its foundations destroyed. Verse 5, Ethiopia, Libya, Lydia, and all Arabia, and all their other allies will be destroyed in that war. For this is what the Lord says, all of Egypt's allies will fall, and the pride of her power will end. And verse 7, Egypt will be desolate, surrounded by desolate nations and cities and ruins, surrounded by other ruined cities. And then, verse 8, and the people of Egypt will know I am the Lord, when I have set Egypt on fire and destroyed all her allies. And then verse 9 says, at that time I'll send swift messengers and ships to terrify the complacent Ethiopians. Great panic will come on them in that day of Egypt's certain destruction. Watch for it. It is sure to come. So there's a prophecy of things that will happen in the end time battles that will occur, things that we have seen prophesied. But now let's conclude with Isaiah chapter 19. And I told you, I can definitely tell you how it's going to end with Egypt. And I know this because the Bible is sure. After all these other things, whatever happens between now and then, we'll have to watch and see. But it says, verse 19 of Isaiah 19, in that day there will be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar to the Lord at its border, and not one that is a false one, but one that actually worships God. Verse 20, and it will be for a sign and for a witness to the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt, for they will cry to the Lord because of the oppressors. And he will send them a savior and a mighty one, and he will deliver him. And so Egypt, for all it will go through, the people then be ready for the return of Jesus Christ, for the millennium to begin, and for God then to begin working with those people. And it says, verse 21, then the Lord will be known to Egypt, and the Egyptians will know the Lord in that day. And they'll make a sacrifice, an offering, and yes, they'll make a vow to the Lord and perform it. So God will give them his spirit to be available to them, to understand the truth. And for the most part, Egypt will worship God. Verse 22, the Lord will strike Egypt. He will strike and heal it. Just like he's going to do with the rest of the world. There's going to be a great tribulation. There's going to be a striking of the nations, but then a healing of the nations, which is what we look forward to and work towards. It says, they will return to the Lord, and he will be entreated by them and heal them. Verse 23, in that day there will be a highway from Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrian will come to Egypt, the Egyptian to Assyria. The Egyptians will serve with the Assyrians, and so their former foes now become friends. Verse 24, in that day Israel will be one of the three with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the land, whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, bless is Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance. This is how it's all going to end. Again, what happens between now and then, it's all irrelevant to each of us if we're not ready before God. We have our part to do. We've got our relationship with God. And that's what's important. These other things are very interesting, and they're going to happen. They will have an effect on us. But there are many things happening in the world today. Things can happen quickly, oftentimes in ways we don't understand. We might anticipate a prophecy or who various nations and peoples and leaders are going to be. But in the end, it's going to happen the way God plans. We need to be ready and right before God, whatever happens in prophecy. Let's conclude with Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and verse 42. He says, watch therefore. We need to be alert to things. You don't know what hour your Lord is coming, however we think we anticipate it. Verse 43, but know this, if the master of the house had known what hour the thief had come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Verse 44, therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. I went to visit a lady this week in the hospital she's about 40, and she was actually exercising. Very good health. She and her husband are health nuts. They eat like super healthy, and they exercise, and they're all vigor and vim and in good shape. And I ended up visiting her in the hospital because she went from the gym, and then she felt the pain, and she had a heart attack. And I visited her and anointed her in the hospital for a heart attack. Now, she's alive, but it's one of those things you never know. You know, we don't know what day or hour the end might come for any of us, for whatever reason, and we have to be ready. In verse 45, and who was that faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, shall find so doing. Those things that God has given us to do and that we have agreed to do. So let's keep that our focus as we work towards these end time events and the time in which Egypt, Assyria, and Israel are all going to be working together, and we're going to be helping them to do that.